Okay. So, okay, yeah, in the middle of Ois Kuf Gimel, Vida. So, we're kind of getting into a new discussion here. Again, it's very, the style here is the style of tangents. But really, the Jewish sage is making a new point to the king of Kuzah. Once they were on the subject of the unique quality of Klal Yisrael in the fact that they are able to achieve Nevuah. Vida. So now he says, realize, ki kol ha-sheyifga novi, anybody who would encounter a novi, beis pagay oisoy, v'shamay dvov ha-elokim, when he would see the novi, and hear his words of prophecy that are coming straight from Hashem. So we're not even getting into the Navi himself. We're talking about the experience of seeing a Navi, as we ended last week. Miskadeshes loiruchnius, a person suddenly feels a whole new surge of spiritual inspiration. Venifrad misugoi, he turns into a different person. A person who saw a Navi and a person who did not are two different types of people. A person who saw a Navi prophecy. Bezakus hanefesh, inasmuch as that spiritual refinement, spiritual sensitivities, the whole thing goes up a notch. Vishtoikiko el amadrega saying, from that time when a person sees the Navi prophesying, he would from then on just strive. Now he has in his head that he wishes he could get to that. Vidavkoi ba'anova ubetara. And the person would then become a more humble person and a more pure person, meaning a less material person. If they're seeing spirituality firsthand, not just kind of trying to connect to it in the very faint way that we do, but actually being hit with the actual divine presence in the face, that takes away a whole bunch of so much of a person's material focus. So again, it's like we explained last week that there was something about seeing the Navi, seeing what he was going through, seeing the charge, the electrical charge, getting in the bull was not a technical thing of hearing something and then saying, here's what I heard. It was a state that overcame a person, right, as we discussed. And anybody watching this was able to see it, and just seeing it happen to him, as we'll see soon, the actual Nevuah is actually experiencing Olam Haba in this world. That we'll see momentarily. When a person got Nevuah, that's why we see also in other places, like the Ramban says, for example, Nevuah was often given as a reward. A person worked to reach a certain level, he was rewarded by a visitation of Nevuah. But Nevuah was actually to connect to Olam Haba in this world, as we'll explain soon. So now he's saying, forget the Navi himself. A person who saw this happen to somebody now had his sight focused for the rest of his life. He could never forget that experience. The impact was something that lasted with him and turned him into a different person. And now he says, the phenomenon of Nevuah in the Jewish people, of Hashem appearing to people, and of other people seeing that, was how their greatness manifested. This was what set the Jewish people apart from all the rest of the nations of the world in a way that could be manifest, not just in their own behavior, but what in their experience, in their life experience, it was the fact that Nevuah was experienced among the Jewish people. And it was also another thing. Nevuah was a clear flash of what Olam Haba is. And therefore, as we'll see soon, in those times, Olam Haba was not an issue of faith. It was something you can actually get a flash of, a preview, in this world. So this is what the Jewish people were living with. They were living with actual connection to Olam Haba. Why is this equal to Olam Haba? So now he explains, Ki ha-mevukash mimenu, because really, all we get in Olam Haba, all that we're so expecting an Olam Haba. What is Olam Haba? All it is Ela Shetashuv Nefesh HaAdam Elokis, that a person's neshama goes back to its divine state. Tiparet Mechushav, it becomes unencumbered, it detaches from the physical senses. Vetira Olam Ahu HaElyon, and it sees the true world. And it enjoys the radiance of the divine light, meaning enjoys the Hashem's presence, ushmiats hadibur ha'elokim, and of hearing the word of Hashem. Meaning, in other words, all olam haba is connecting to your more divine level and experiencing divinity. That's what Olam Haba is. Now, many of us will hear that and will say, that's all. What? Spirituality is something I don't enjoy all that much in this world. And now you're ruining it and you're telling me that all I have to anticipate in Olam Haba is just spirituality? So actually, the King of Kuzar is going to ask that question soon. It might sound like a letdown for some of us. The truth is, it sounds like a letdown for anybody honest, because we have never experienced spirituality in a way that we say, this is all I want, I'd sacrifice any experience for this. But he actually hints to the answer in what he's saying. When a person is detached from his senses, we have to realize, like we've said many times, that the truth is, in this world, we are desensitized. We aren't capable of really feeling anything. We have five senses, which allow us to feel certain very specific experiences that are limited to this world, and that's all. But there's so much more experience out there in the bigger world that we simply don't begin to connect to because we are blocked with the body. And therefore it's true we don't experience Olam Haba, we don't appreciate the experience of Ruchnius now, but that's only because we're encumbered by a physical body with physical senses. Anything we can experience is only by means of our physical senses. And therefore the real fun is simply beyond us. It's kind of like you take a person who's under anesthesia and you feed him a whole meal, a gourmet meal, the best meal possible. It means nothing to him. Why? Because his taste buds are off. They're turned off right now, they're switched off, so he can't appreciate it. That's what we are right now. We are, our real feelings are numbed, but really numbed, like under anesthesia.
Meant to strive for something when we have no hasaga of what we're going for, or what we can't possibly.
So the truth is that that's right. We in this world cannot. What's that?
Shabbos. Main hole.
Okay, may aim.
Maybe an idea.
Okay, the truth is that also depends on how different people experience their Shabbos. And some people might say, "Oy vey, if that's what I want, boys, you know, 60 times is cumbersome." Right. So the truth is that for most of us today, we cannot appreciate what Olam Haba is. And the truth is, even then they weren't able to. At the end of the day, even what they were experiencing then was just a small field. But for them, it was enough of a field to actually experience what it was for a Navi. All we can understand is that it's much better than anything that we've ever experienced. Now, how that's going to work, we don't know. But we can appreciate the fact that at the end of the day, using this muscle of a numbed person to understand that there's so much more fun out there, that there's so much more pleasure that we simply don't have the capacity for in this world. So everything that we ever experience, good food, this, that, is just a very faint, diluted form of pleasure that Hashem allows a little bit of it to trickle down into this world. But really, it's all coming. Any pleasure that you experience in this world is really coming from the source of pleasure. The source of pleasure is Hashem. When He allows you to enjoy a good hamburger, or whatever it is that appeals to you, what He's doing is, He's filtering a little bit of real fun through all kinds of thick filters. And a little bit of it hits you as a gourmet meal. But that's really a very faint, coarse form of pleasure, which was made to work for the pathetic body. When a person is freed of his body, he's really capable of experiencing. So it's mamish the same. If you think of it in terms of, try to explain to a person who is under anesthesia how good a meal is. He doesn't even hear you, right? And forget about tasting anything. He'll just choke on it. And that's why we find ourselves choking on Torah. But it's mamish the same thing. It's because our taste buds now are off. Now, the truth is we can work on trying to get some of this experience. A person can learn to enjoy spirituality, but at the end of the day, in this world, where it's so much of a struggle, you have to work so hard to be able to connect a little bit to enjoying spirituality a little bit, and even then, it doesn't compete with the sensual pleasures, right? Then, it'll just be natural. So yes, these are not things that we can actually grasp, but yet we can understand in concept that Hashem created us because in order to bestow upon us the epitome of what He can give. And therefore everything that we're experiencing in this world, all the material pleasures which we share with all the goyim and with all the animals, right? Most of the pleasures, the most physical pleasures, are not everything that He has to offer. He has much more intended for us. Now again, then they were able to actually experience it. Today we're missing that. Now he says, Ki ha-nefesh ha-hi, when a person does experience this, let's say a person did have nevuah, or even saw a Navi, and actually got a flash of Olam Haba. And it's not just that you got a flash of the experience, but you actually saw that that's beyond the smokescreen that makes up this world. Meaning, when you come back from that nevuah, you're now living with the very keen realization that the world around me, the real world is just beyond that. You're living with that realization the whole time. It's like you see the curtain and you realize that there's activity beyond the curtain. Such a person, he says, Tiyeh b'tucha min ha-mavis kishiyichlu choyo ha-gufin. Such a person now is not worried about death anymore. Right? Death seems like a scary prospect to us in this world because it seems like the end of anything we can relate to. That's really what's scary about death. Even though Jews live with faith in Olam Haba, for a non-Jew, person who doesn't live with the belief in Olam Haba, death really is a horrible prospect. That's when I cease to exist. But even when we do believe in Olam Haba, it's very theoretical, and life as I know it stops at death, and therefore, it's hard for us to really start feeling positively about it, as something to look forward to. But when a person has actually experienced what's on the other side of the curtain, when a person has actually experienced what it's going to be like after death, he's seen that in the midst of his life, he's not scared anymore. It's just an issue, okay, when am I going to get there? He has no fear whatsoever of death because he's already seen what's there. So therefore he says, that's why, yes, the Jews lived this way. וכאשר תמצא תורה שמגיעים בחוכמתו ומעשהו אל המדרגה הזאת. And now he says, he's leading up to the point that's going to be brought out more clearly soon. But he says, when you have a Torah that actually provides you with the precise instructions to bring you to the ultimate existence, meaning, we're going to bring this out more clearly, but I want to make it clear already now. Take our concept of Olam Haba today, which is, at least in a superficial way, you might say it's the same as other religions. You do all kinds of things now, and you're promised things in a later world. A leap of faith, right? You're supposed to believe that. But he says, when you have a faith that doesn't tell you believe that there's an afterlife, when you have a faith, when you have a Torah that tells you, do this, 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 and this, and you'll experience it now. Test it. Go for it. Try it now. When you're in the right place and doing the right things, meaning when you are in Eretz Yisrael, really working to tune into all the Torah's requirements, and you see that by following all those instructions, you actually connect to that ultimate experience. The afterlife was a very big subject in antiquity before they just dropped the concept. But at that time they were very, very concerned with how do we ensure our afterlife. So he says, when you have a Torah that doesn't just talk theoretically but it tells you, here's what you do, and you can already see it now in this world, you're ensured that yes, this is the Torah that provides you with the road and with the path to that ultimate experience, the ultimate, the afterlife. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we call Olam HaNeshamas. What's going to be in the future, Tchias HaMesim, is a different story. But they're now in Olam HaNeshamas, Olam HaBo, what we're talking about here. So therefore, he's making a very important point. He's saying, Judaism, the way it's really meant to work, is not that Olam HaBo is something you believe in, and that it's not something you can relate to at all. True, in your physical state, you can't relate to it at all. But you can work towards reaching a situation of actually experiencing it in this world. You can get a preview. And that is obviously the best guarantee that this is the road to that afterlife.
What is a preview?
Nevuah. Nevuah. Don't know. That's all I could say. I don't know.
Bright light.
What's that?
They all see a bright light.
Yeah, what do they call it? The after death experience. There's a term for it. After death experience. I don't know. I can't comment. Now, Omar HaKuzari. So now the king of Kuzar basically says what we expressed earlier. What did you say, Olam HaBa? Disconnecting from the physical senses and enjoying spirituality. Ani roya shi'ude zulaschem shmeinim udishenim yudeichem. I see that the promises of other religions are a lot more juicy than what you're offering. What's with 70 virgins? What's with pearly gates? Nothing. Omer HaChover. So the Chover says, Aval hem kulam achrei hamavos. Yeah, but all the religions are talking theoretically about things that are after death. There is absolutely no hint of these things in this world, and there's no indication that they actually exist. It's just that you're told to believe it, and you have to believe it. But there's no way of actually going and testing it. So Amar Kuzari, so the king of Kuzar acknowledges the truth of this point, and he says, the Kuzari says, yeah, you got me there. As I just said, Christianity, Islam, all these other religions seem to promise much more juicy and attractive stuff. But at the same time, I have never seen a Christian or a Muslim or some other believer in some other faith. He hears, he goes for the drasha on Sunday afternoon mass, and he hears about all the great things and the pearly gates and all that stuff, and he comes home saying, I can't wait. Yes, they all talk about their paradise, but none of them are in a rush. What's that?
All the suicide bombers.
It's true. The truth is that is to be taken as a reflection of our state. Of our situation. In earlier times it wasn't like that. Suicide bombers is a relatively new phenomenon. Meaning, 500 years ago that wasn't going on in the Muslim world. There's a couple of explanations to it. If you want to explain it in a technical way, it has to do with the fact that they have no lives anyways. A Saudi Arabian, wealthy Arab kid wouldn't do that. It's the Palestinians who have no lives anyways. Anything is better. And the truth is that they know how to catch the right kids. These are troubled kids. But besides that, if we wanted to address it on a bit of a more spiritual level, the ruchnius, the spiritual properties that we see by the Arabs are often being thrown in our faces, kind of like a show of, why aren't the Jews at this level? Look at what the Arabs are doing. Why aren't you at this level? One of them is Emunah. Alright. But we won't get too into that. In the typical normal scenario, even in the Muslim world, this is not something that goes on. People are very happy living in this world. They like it here, and they're not rushing to get to the next, despite all the great descriptions. So now, Avalim Haya Bichota La Achram Elef Shanim. Yes, again, take that devout Christian or whoever it is talking about all the great experience of the next world. Yes, and in this world, he's struggling for parnasa, he's having a hard time making ends meet. And yet you ask him, would you like to live for 1,000 more years? He'll jump on it. Why? Aren't you in a rush to get to paradise? He says, no. If he could push it off for 1,000 years, the Meseres HaKayim u'ba'ola olam, and he'll still remain here among the living. With the yoke of this world, the tzvaynai, and all of its problems, hayabaycher bezeh. Yes, the devout Christian. And the devout Muslim in normal circumstances.
You'll also have to take 1,000 extra years.
Ah, okay. Okay. We're kind of getting... Okay, let's see. They would... What? He said devout Jew would also take 1,000 extra years. We're not in a rush either. None of us are especially anxious. Oh, that's the point. Okay, so let's see. That's really the point he's making. You see that this is inherently a flaw in their faith. How this applies to us, we'll see momentarily. But he's making the point that when Olam Haba is an issue of completely abstract leap of faith, you're being described things that you have no way of checking. So, yeah, they believe it, but nobody's in a rush to get there, and they'd rather continue for 1,000 more years with the lousy life than rush to paradise. So now, as you said before, as you just said, with many devout Jews, it's the same thing.
So,
okay, so the truth is we have to address this in two levels. There are two reasons why a Jew might want to live longer. If it's because, sometimes it's not because he doesn't believe in it. He believes it 100% and he's anticipating it and he's looking forward to it. Yet, he wants to live a little longer so as to enhance it even more. That's one thing. But we certainly do see the people, the difference will be that he has no fear of death. He has no fear of death. It's a technical thing. I'd like to delay it because I have more to accomplish. But there is no fear of death. And that, we certainly do see that. But the truth is that the answer to this in the context that we're discussing here is that that's part of the tragedy of being in Golis. That's part of the tragedy of not being in the state the Jewish people are really meant to be in. The state that the Torah described, when the Jewish people as a whole are keeping the Torah properly, is the state when Nevuah is prevalent, as we described before, where a person can actually work toward experiencing Olam Haba in this world. And that's the way Judaism was meant to be experienced and lived. We today have to realize, he's going to stress this much more as we go through the Sefer, we today are not living what Judaism was meant to be. We are living an almost comatose version of Judaism. He says later in the Sefer, it's almost like a dead person as opposed to a live person. As far as what the experience of Judaism is meant to be. Experience of Judaism is meant to be that you can actually connect to Hashem in a live way. It's supposed to include Nevuah. Not having Nevuah is not the natural state. It's not like Nevuah is some utopian thing. Not having Nevuah means that in a sense we're on hold. In a sense Judaism is on pause. I say in a sense because there's a lot to be accomplished in our state now also. But it's a state of gullus. The natural state of the Jewish people is with that live connection, which provides a completely different, a much more vital experience of Judaism than anything we can relate to. Sorry. Go ahead. Absolutely. That's what I mean when I say that, when I stress in a sense. Because there's certainly a lot to accomplish, and we're going to be getting to that soon also. Absolutely. When we are put into this state where it seems that the lines are disconnected and that the lights are off and that we don't have that live connection that we used to have, that's right. It's our faith being put to the test. Absolutely. And we can achieve very great things by going through that loyally. But at the end of the day, we have to realize that this, our life's experience, our frame of reference, our experience of Judaism is not what Judaism was meant to be. It's not the ideal picture of Judaism. It's Judaism when we have to bring it back to what it was meant to be. It's Judaism in the wake of failures. Fine. But what Judaism is really meant to be is that Judaism where there's that live connection, where any person can work toward connecting with Hashem on a level of prophecy, which is, in essence, experiencing Olam Haba in this world.
So, the break in the live connection, is that because of the Ruah, the stopping, the Beis HaMikdash, or both?
As we'll see, it all goes together.
When did Nevuah stop?
Nevuah stopped at approximately at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. But really what that showed was, the second Beis HaMikdash was not the same as the first Beis HaMikdash. Second Beis HaMikdash was kind of a beginning of the Golos. It was a preparation for the years ahead. Rav Hirsch has a long exposition on that. But really, the essence of the essential difference between Golos and not Golos is the presence of the Shekhinah in Klal Yisrael. The presence of the Shekhinah in Klal Yisrael manifests first and foremost in Nevuah, the prophecy being prevalent among the Jewish people, and then a million other ways as well. We'll see later as we go along. Even a person who wasn't a Navi can experience all kinds of signs of divine presence. Like we said, we're talking about in the Dor HaMidbar, the Man, the Anonym, etc., etc. Seeing Hashem basically with you in a personal way, on a daily basis, in a live way, not in a way that you have to think into to connect to. It's a completely different life's experience. We'll see later. What?
The time of in those glorious days where they saw Hashem, shouldn't have happened because...
How could it possibly happen?
Because and today, if we were, why can't, you know, today, if we were to see the revelation, why can't we see
so I'll say two things. First of all, that's not quite so. Meaning, people who experienced the greatest of experiences remain humans, although it's a different, it has to be understood in a different way. The tests that they faced are things that it's hard for us to relate to since we've never experienced before. But they were facing much, much greater spiritual tests than we are. Hashem always made sure to balance things out. And therefore, for example, the lure for Avodah Zarah stopped at about the same time that Nevuah stopped. We have to note that. The lure of Avodah Zarah was something... Can anybody today know what that means? Like that people were so... It was this craze that you had from people. You have to realize that. From people. Like people who otherwise shomer Torah and mitzvahs, it sounds like just wacky to us. But that's what it was. These were people who kept Torah and mitzvahs.
We understand Torahs nowadays.
Oh, exactly. Today we can understand. A from person talks Lashon Hara. It was very connected, but that wasn't it. That wasn't it. It's part of it. And you're referring to the Chazal and the Masechta Sanhedrin that say that Loi. That's right. But that was one element. But it certainly was a lot more than that. Today we definitely do understand the Yitzhar of Arayas, but we don't understand the Yitzhar of Avodah Zarah because they asked that it be removed. Why? Because they realized that they reached a point in history where they can't handle that test anymore. Hashem sets up the lure to the wrong side to correspond to the greatness of the right side. It still wasn't just that. You see that it was an abrupt development. They davened for it to stop and it stopped. It wasn't just the fact that you were able to achieve. That was part of it also. All these things are elements, but that wasn't all. For example, right, we have the Gemara that says about Menashe. That Menashe said, right, one of the Amoraim talked about, yeah, he said, I'm going to talk about my friend Menashe, our friend Menashe. Menashe said, you think you're my friend? You're talking about entire greatness. Menashe, right, we all know him as the most wicked of kings. He said, who do you think you are? He said to one of the great Amoraim, to call yourself my friend. And he stumped him with a halachic question. And then so the Amora asked him, this is in a dream. He said, so why'd you do it? They said, if you would have lived in those times, you would have been described how you have been running with a craze after it. So it's more than just Arayas, and it's also more than just achieving things. Whatever it is, we're seeing here that yes, this is what Judaism was meant to be. And therefore he says now, Amar HaKavir, the sage says, Yes, we've shown that the members of the different faiths, none of them are eager to get there. So now the Khuzari says, and what happens, what do you think would be, if a person would actually see it with his own eyes? Samah Khuzari, the king of Khuzari says, of course, the fact that they're not, that they don't anticipate it is due to the fact that they never saw it. And therefore, like you said, there's always that, well, maybe not really. I'd rather stay alive and better, you know, better to stay on familiar ground. But he said that if a person would actually see it, maybe Lisafik Shumis Avesh Tasmid Napsha La Preda Michushov. There's no question that if a person would actually see it, a person would actually experience what you're describing, where a person actually was detached from his physical senses and experienced spirituality, that a person would want to stay in that state just enjoying it. The Hu Shem is Avel Amaves. And yes, you would have a person who is actually looking forward to death. So again, like we said, there's that technical struggle. He's looking forward to death because he knows it's waiting for him. While at the same time, technically he realizes that if I can put it off another day, I can enhance my state all the more. But it's much more of a technical sort of thing than a fear of death. It's not a fear of death. On the contrary, when it actually does happen, it's really going to be great. So the people who did experience it, that's certainly conceivable that they do not fear death. They don't feel any apprehension. So Amar HaChover. So the sage says, that's really what the Torah is meant to provide. What the Torah is promising us is that through keeping the Torah, we connect to Hashem in all the ways we've been describing in the previous weeks. We connect to Hashem, and that actually connects us. It's not just that we're doing His mitzvahs, but we see His connection to us manifest in a live way through Nevuah and through all kinds of other things. It doesn't have to be Nevuah per se. Let's say I have a person who's not quite on the level of Nevuah. As we've seen, Nevuah required a lot of work. But people could get there. Let's say I have a person who's not quite on the level of Nevuah. Was it either Nevuah or nothing? Not at all. The presence of the Shekhinah manifested in many other ways. Say, for example, the Gemara says that in the time of Shimon ben Shetach, the wheat in Eretz Yisrael grew the size of kidneys. You ever seen a wheat berry? Wheat berry is a little, it's like this, oh, you see barley, the barley that you get for your challah before you cook it. After you cook it, it's already bloated. But before you cook it, right, when it's dry, tiny, that's what a wheat berry looks like. The wheat berries in those days were the size of kidneys. This big. Oh, that's it. One constitutes your whole challah. Right? So now, that's how great things were in the time of Shimon ben Shetach. So, let's understand, what's so great about that? Is chalent so much better if it's all just one big berry as opposed to a lot of barley in the bowl? What's so great about having a wheat berry that's this big? So the answer is, and this is part of what we're talking about when we say we have to connect to the experience. The point is not that now it takes less wheat berries to fill a bowl of chalent. The point is something much more profound. Take a person, again, simpler fellow, he's not on the level of Nevuah. He's not on the level of Nevuah. But he has been working on his Shmiras Haloshen very hard, putting a lot of effort into it. And then he's growing. And then when he comes out to view his field, he sees that whereas last year at ordinary wheat berries, this year the wheat berries are this big. You have to understand that this person, that's an exhilarating experience, not because, great, honey, forget about it, we don't need 500 wheat berries to fill up a challah bowl anymore, now it's one. No. The point is, he sees Hashem personally responding to him in a personal way. Right? It's like mamish feeling Hashem's pat on the back, without Nevuah. It could be this way, it could be in a million other ways. People lived with it in a much, much liver way. And also, even that we can't really relate to, because today, it would say, so you have to realize that it's Hashem doing it. But that's also because the connection is off. So you have to work to realize it. Then you mamish felt the warmth of Hashem relating to you. Even if it wasn't through actual Nevuah. And this manifests in a million ways. A person came to the Beis HaMikdash, she saw what was going on there. All the miraculous things. The whole system was just built in a completely supernatural way. A person felt that he was entering a realm that was above this world. Right? They cooked the chatos in a pot, the earthenware pots. And after you cook the chatos in a pot, earthenware, when you know the halacha is, the earthenware absorbs and you can never get it out. The chatos becomes noisa. That earthenware pot has to be destroyed. So how did it work? They threw it to the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, it cracked and sank into the ground. That was everyday business there. That was how it worked. It just got buried into the ground. Very easy incineration system. This was just one example of how things worked in the Beis HaMikdash. You saw Hashem there. And you saw Hashem in Yerushalayim. And you saw Hashem around Eretz Yisrael. You saw him at work. You felt him interacting with you. It's a completely different experience. This is what the Torah is meant to provide us with. It's not meant to provide us with, do this in this world. You won't see any results. And then when you get to the next world, they're promising you all kinds of great stuff. That's in our comatose experience of Judaism, as we'll see much later. But really, what the Torah was meant to be, what Judaism is meant to be, is this. These are instructions to actually getting there in this world. These are instructions to bringing the Shekhinah down on Klal Yisrael, and to having the Shekhinah shine through Klal Yisrael, all around Eretz Yisrael, you see it. V'ischaber ha'inyan ha'eloiki banu b'gdula u'bekavad u'bemoifsim. And yes, Hashem's presence connects to us, and it manifests in all kinds of supernatural ways, which really glorified the Jewish people. At that time, in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, this was known all around the world. It was acknowledged by the other nations as well. Okay, the other nations, they each believed in their own pagans. But the other nations, first of all, they feared the God of the Jews. Yeah, they had their different gods, fine. But they believed in the God of the Jews, even if they had wrong ideas as to his exclusivity. But they feared him, they were scared of him. And also, they realized that the Jews, with their God, were living a completely different life's experience. Which is why, also, they acknowledged him as the greatest of gods. Even though they, we're stuck with our gods. That's who we have. That's why, for example, right? We see that the non-Jews acknowledge this, because this was evident. You couldn't get away from it. A person who came to Eretz Yisrael saw it all over the place. That's why, for example, you see that the non-Jews related to it in this way. What happened when Yoina was asked who he is? Remember? They asked Yoina, who are you? And he said, I am a Hebrew, and I worship Hashem Elokei Hashemayim Velokei Haaretz. And what was their response? Whoa, he's one of those. Right? Now these were people who had their own gods. No, but everybody related with all. They knew that this was a whole different story. And what happened with the Pelishtim? And when the Pelishtim were fighting the Jews, they did fight the Jews. They figured, maybe we can, again, they had distorted pictures. Maybe we can get in the back door when Hashem is busy with something else and we can quickly not wipe some of them out. But what happened? They were in the middle of fighting the Jews in the days of Eli HaKohen, and the Jews brought the Aron out to the battlefield. Turned out to be a fatal mistake. But what happened when they brought the Aron out to the battlefield? How did the Pelishtim respond? The Pelishtim panicked. You have to note that. It's very significant. The Navi says that the Pelishtim response when they saw the Aron coming out was bedlam. And they said, who can stand against this mighty God? This was how they related. Now afterwards, what happened. Fine, it was part of Hashem's plan. They didn't understand it that way, and therefore they went through what they went through. Whatever it is, we have to realize that the Jewish people's connection with Hashem manifested in a very obvious, apparent, physical way that everybody around could see. And therefore the Jews were held on a pedestal in those days. Even though nations tried to get their digs. You gotta do what you gotta do. What's that? In a very, very faint way. By? I'm not supposed to be doing very good. Yeah, we do see it manifest in certain ways in our times also. we have to realize that at the end of the day, it's just a faint reflection of the real thing. I remember also seeing by a Levaya, by Avigdor Miller's Levaya, Rav Scheinberg was there. And it was very, I don't know, it must have been 98 or something. And when he was leaving, so they had a police escort him, right, get him through the crowds and take him away from there. There were no cars able to get in. So I just remember how when he came through and the policeman actually encountered him, it was like, he really saw this certain awe, right, that they like, kind of like, you know, surrounding. I remember one of them even kind of like touching his talis. But, okay, but again, that's not, these are very, very, very faint reflections of the real thing. So now, and therefore, he says, note, and here, the Kuzari has mamish a mind-boggling answer to the famous question of how come the Torah speaks of material rewards? Right? Why doesn't the Torah speak of the next world? Famous question. All of the Kadmonians struggle with this question. Kuzari has a class, unbelievable answer. But what does the Torah promise? If you're good, rain. Right? There won't be sickness. No strep throats. You know, all kinds of that's what the Torah is promising for loyalty. That's the question. So the Kuzari says this is the point. Al Kain, what have we been stressing here? That the point is for the Jewish people to connect to the ultimate greatness, the ultimate experience is already here in this world, and therefore, einenu oimer b'Torah ki imtaso ha-mitzvah hazois. The Torah doesn't say anywhere, if you do this, aviachem achrei ha-moves. El ginois vanois, I'll bring you after death to all kinds of wonderful gardens and pleasures. The Torah doesn't say that. What does the Torah say? Aval hu oimer. The Torah says, see, we have to note something. Yes, the Torah promises rain, etc., etc., but the Torah also promises something else, which we have to realize is what really puts all the promises of rain into perspective. Oimer. Sha'atem tiuli le'om va'ani eye lochem le'elohim. That's really the promise. All these other things are manifestations. The promise is, you keep the Torah, you will be my nation, and I will be your God. What does that mean? It's not just on a spiritual, metaphysical level that we know it today, but rather, ve'ani geschem. It means, I will be personally involved with you. That is the promise. Which means, ve'yemi kemishiyamod lefana. If you people live up to my program, I will be personally involved with you to the extent that there will be people interacting with me. You'll have people coming up to Shemaim. I'll do that. You know, if I need to speak to somebody, I'll bring him up. We said this was not just Moshe Rabbeinu. This happened to different people throughout history. Eliyahu had his different ascents, and Yeshua HaKohen HaGadol, later in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, he came up for a visit among the Malachim. Yes, Hashem might call you, like when the boss, right, decides to fly you in for a weekend in his suite. That's what was going on. Hashem says, this will be what will be going on. And these people actually ascended to Shamayim and were busy circulating among the Malachim. The Kohen Lema Malachim Ben Adam. Oh, that's a very interesting insight. You see all throughout Yechezkel, all the Nevuahs start with Ben Adam. Why is he always called Ben Adam? Was Yechezkel the only person in his time? Well, the answer is, you know where Yechezkel was? He was in a place where he was the only Ben Adam around. And that's why he was identified as Ben Adam. He was up in the higher spheres, surrounded by Malachim. He was the only person in sight. So therefore, that's how he was referred to. The person over there. The only person around. That was how they distinguished him. There were a bunch of malachim around, and Yechezkel was there too, so they called him Ben Adam. And also, a part of this personal involvement will be sometimes I'll send malachim down to earth. Sometimes individuals will see them, sometimes the public will see them. Shemrim eschem v'nilchamim lochem. You'll see them protecting you and fighting for you. Like for example, right? When Chizkiyahu was being besieged, Yerushalayim was surrounded. They didn't know what's going to be. So what happened? all of a sudden, one night, Hashem dispatched a small unit of messengers, and the next morning they woke up, the whole camp was dead. That was the way things operated in those times. That was just one example. But these things happened on a regular basis. Regular, relatively, okay? But yeah, that there was some problem. The Jews went out to war. And Hashem said, alright guys, stand back for a minute. Let me send my boys out. And the boys came down from Shemaim, wiped out the enemy camp, and the Jews just had to clean up the loot. Okay, we're really just beginning the description of the way the Jewish experience is meant to be. But, as usual, we're stopping in mid-sentence. We'll continue next week, Bezos Hashem. So again, yeah, for the